Interval 2. A Pale Horse. The planet Innix, now. Mortarion measured Typhon with a hard gaze, as if by will alone he could peer through that sallow face and pull back the layers to find the old friend from his youth. That person was still in there somewhere, obfuscated under years of change and a fathomless distance. But the bond between them seemed blurred now, and hard to grasp. Do I still trust him? The question lurked in the gloom of the Primarch's thoughts. Is it conviction, or just the inertia of the kinship we once had back then? He had no answer. All he could be certain of was that Typhon had changed while he was gone. Something had tested him, physically as well as mentally. That much was clear by the gauntness of his aspect and the moments when he failed to hide the haunted flickers in his gaze. There was no other warrior, living or dead, whom Mortarion would have wanted by his side for the invasion of Terra. Bitter memory cut through him as he recalled the last time he had tried to attack the house of one he called father, and he vowed that shameful failure would never be repeated. With the Death Guard whole and reunited, with clever Typhon at his right hand, it would be done right this time.
It will be done.
He had to hold back the impulse to snarl the words. Mortarion drew in a slow breath, momentarily surprised by the potency of his own emotions. Such reactions ran deep and low in him, and it was a rare thing in these days for them to rise so close to the surface. He became aware of his hand gripping the haft of Silence tightly, as if the weapon was straining to be let free. Typhon advanced and made the old gesture of salute, one mailed fist to his chest.
My lord, would you grant me a request? I ask this of you as your comrade and your brother in battle.
Name it. Mortarion's eyebrow rose. This was unexpected.
Your command barge, Greenheart. When we quit this world, you would return aboard it to the Endurance to dock with the flagship and lead the fleet from there.
That was my intention.
I suggest that you do not. Instead, I ask that you bring Greenheart to my warship and give me the privilege of carrying your banner to Terra.
He bowed his head, despite Mortarion's earlier disapproval of the action.
It would say much for sealing any rifts that may have grown between those of my splinter fleet and the rest of our armada. It would reaffirm our unity of purpose.
The Primarch's first instinct was to deny the First Captain's entreaty. It would be a break from protocol for the Reaper of Men to command from another officer's ship, even as fine and mighty a vessel as Typhon's Terminus Est. But his brother's words held merit. In the time while the splinter fleet had been gone, Mortarion had heard the grumblings among his warriors and seen the seeds of division being planted. He wanted none of that, especially at this critical juncture. The rumours of breaks within the legions themselves were rarely spoken of, but known. There was talk of warriors on both sides of the rebel and loyalist divide breaking faith with their commanders and seeking to ally with their opposite numbers. The mingled rage and regret Mortarion still felt over the betrayal of Battle Captain Garrow of the 7th Great Company and his men aboard the starship Eisenstein had never gone away. Unity was needed here, and Typhon's unconventional suggestion had merit.
Protocol be damned, then, Mortarion told himself. Better to send a message.
Agreed, said the Reaper of Men. You and I will stand side by side as we break Terra's barricades and bring my father's defenders to heel. As dusk falls, their fears will rise.
Typhon looked up, and his eyes were bright.
So shall it be.
By day's end, the work of killing a world was declared complete. Innix was reduced to a barren grave. The command had been to raise it for daring to defy the War Master, and now that deed was done. But perhaps, on their way back to the great flotilla of battlecruisers and warships in high orbit, the last few Death Guard scouts sent out to make final judgment might have seen something stir, if they had cared to look closely enough. Not survivors, of course, perish the thought. Everyone down there was dead. No, something else. Something born out of the festering mass of rotting corpses. Something that animated the decayed remains, consuming even as it exerted its own grotesque parody of life. Silver black and swarming, crawling and mewling. These things went unseen. Above the clouded night side of the planet, above the haze backlit by the ceaseless fiery ejecta of a thousand volcanic eruptions, the Death Guard ships moved into deployment formation. They gathered their Stormbirds and Thunderhawks to them, pulled in the close-range system boats that had been used to blast away Inix's lunar defence batteries, one by one orienting themselves to leave the murdered world in their wakes. The exhausts of huge plasmatic drives were lit, and the ships made space for the closest Mandeville point, high up above the plane of the ecliptic, where they would be beyond the effect of the system's mass shadow and free to enter the warp. Greenheart powered along with the fleet, steering through the mass of them with its landing wings unfurled. This was the closest Mortarion would ever come to the gaudy displays of battle pennants, laser glyphs and high honours that bedecked the command barges of his brother Primarchs. Such things were irrelevant, foolish indulgences, and beneath the dour martial character of the Death Guard. The appearance of the ship itself, and the knowledge of who was aboard it, would be enough to stir the spirit of this legion. Greenheart passed over the bow of the Endurance, and her helmsman made a salute of sorts, dipping the solar wings as it vectored away from the craft's usual berth at the rear of the warship's great operations tower. The vessel flew on, allowing the crews of all the other great ships to witness the passage. The indomitable will, the spectre of death, and the undying, the Reaper's scythe and the stalwart, all of them ceremonially raised the cannons of their turrets and bared the lenses of their mega-laser batteries, each action a signal of their readiness for war. And then Mortarion's war barge approached the Terminus Est. The match, in size and raw combat potency for the Primarch's battleship, First Captain Typhon's vessel was a terror to behold. A capital ship of unique design, it radiated lethality from its great forked prow to the complex structures of its heavy gun tiers. The fearsome vessel's decks opened to accept Greenheart's arrival like a supplicant's embrace. The Primarch's first footfall within the battleship's massive primary landing bay echoed and rang across the cavernous space. In return, a thunderous report of fists against chest plates answered Mortarion's arrival, as countless ranks of legionaries saluted him. Typhon's elite warriors, the Grave Wardens, were there to greet the Reaper of Men and the First Captain. He saw Hadrabulus Vios, Typhon's trusted second, at the head of the formation. Like their commander, Vios and the others were ashen and drawn, but only if one observed them in a certain light. Mortarion gave no speeches. He made no entreaty to be broadcast across the flotilla. Aware that images of his arrival were being seen on all the ships, he only paused to give the landing bay a considering gaze, and then a nod, as if to say, "This will do. This will be enough." On the bridge of the Terminus Est, Typhon gave the command to ready the ship for the warp, but held back on the final word. He extended a hand to his liegelord and nodded towards the blackness of the interstellar void, out past the great armoured glass of the dome above their heads. "By your will," he said. "Speak the words, and the legion will follow." Silence clanged against the deck as Mortarion struck the metal with the hilt of the massive scythe. He pointed with his free hand into the blackness.
We go to the war, he rasped.
And there we will be renewed,
Typhon said quietly, as the battleship's reality-distorting drives spun up to critical momentum, keening their song. Barriers sprang up to cover the viewports across the bridge, physical baffles as well as the non-corporeal shields of the vessel's Gellerfields that would serve to conceal the shattering lunacy of the raw immaterium. It was said that no living being could stand to look into the madness of that other realm for more than an instant, lest their mind be forever petrified by what they saw there. But Mortarion had seen the face of the demons that writhed and howled in that place. Indeed, he had one of them trapped in fetters that he had forged with his own hands, and the black fear of their origins did not intimidate him. Mortarion reached out to touch a control and held open the last shutter with a press of his thumb, ignoring the chiming clockwork trills of alarm bells and the rush of dismay from Typhon's crew serfs. The warp opened up to them in a raw-edged bleeding orifice, a wound in the surface of space-time. It grew into an abyssal laughing maw that engulfed them as the Terminus Est was first to cross the boundary into the unreal. Mortarion held the shutter open for long seconds, ignoring the weeping and babbling of human helots and the crack of their necks as they were silenced by the grave wardens for their disgrace. He stared directly into the Empyrean, almost daring it to show him something. They carved through the wispy membranes of reality, and at last the Reaper of Men released the switch and let the shutter slam closed. Something close to a smile began to form on his pallid lips. But the next breath he took was a mouthful of ashes. His mighty lungs twitched in reflex, the multi-lobed organs tightening within his ribcage. Pain lanced through him. Impossibly, he was choking. Mortarion's hand went to his throat. The muscles there went into spasm as his flesh refused to obey. Breath was suddenly a memory. He was struck voiceless, unable to emit even the slightest gasp. How was this possible? He was one of the most powerful post-humans in existence, a demigod of war capable of incredible feats of prowess. Nothing could stop him. Nothing could choke him. The Primarch turned to see every figure on the bridge suffering the same sudden, impossible malaise. Morag, clawing at the neck guard of his armour, his death shroud, rigid and uncomprehending, and, close at hand, crew serfs whose faces turned cyanosis blue as they suffocated. Only Typhon seemed unaffected, the first captain staring away into nothing. With all the strength he could muster, Mortarion tried to force a sound from his mouth, but there was only the rough, stifling sensation of cinders filling his gullet, packing his lungs. Then a memory exploded in his thoughts. I know this. Mortarion had experienced this horror once before, deep in his past, forgotten and buried until this moment brought it back to brutal life. His vision fogged, shading with nauseating hues of bruised emerald. He glared back at the closed shutter and the hidden horrors beyond. It was the warp. An undeniable instinct, that bone-deep hatred he held for the ways of the witch, made him certain of it. Something out there was doing this, making him remember. The planet Barbarous, before. The overlord that called himself Hethemre had earned the displeasure of the Barbaran elect by taking lands that did not belong to him, and then refusing to return them to the rightful tithe owner. In a fit of screaming, murderous pique, Hethemre had decided that rather than retreat back to his own territory, he would kill every servile and chattel in the region, and burn the sodden, muddy land in revenge. It was one more hateful act in an epoch of small, pointless skirmishes that seemed to have no end. The Barbaran elect were the uncontested masters of this blighted world, with no threats from below or above to challenge that dominion. And without such outside concerns to occupy their venial and combative manners, their innate cruelty turned poisonous, if not given opportunity to be vented. They would regularly turn upon one another for the thinnest of reasons, an imagined slight, the resurgence of an old grudge, or just out of sheer desperation against the monotony, and take a perverse joy in visiting their malice upon each other. But it was said that the overlord kin could not easily be killed, at least not by means that men understood, and the scars they gave one another in rare moments of face-to-face battle were few and far between. More often than not, they would inflict damage not through direct conflict, but through the destruction of holdings and the ceaseless brutality they inflicted on the humans that were unfortunate enough to serve them. This was the life of a lesser on Barbaros. To be human on this mist-wreathed world was to be born knowing only fear, to be beneath consideration, to live with the expectation that the Reaper's blade would fall with each new dawn, to know that creatures ancient and horrific held your life in their clawed hands, apt to ruin it or end it on a whim, to dare to hope that these ghoul-like intelligences would consider your existence so far beneath them as to ignore it, and through that disinterest let you live for another day. What fear there was on Barbaros. What dread there was to know one's life was valued less than a pawn upon a regicide board. In the newly ruined wasteland created by Hethemre, stretching from the flaming remains of the Roadscar Mill and clear across the Hadia Winds Moor, there was only ash and cinders. The furious overlord had called up green witchfire from beneath the dull earth, great tumbling jags of it that exploded out of the marshes to set even the damp mosses and knife grasses alight. Thick, cloying smoke hugged the ground, and the fires spread in loping bounds, burning everything. No one escaped the inferno at the mill, as it moved like a living thing to surround the settlement's walls, and then drew tight to smother it. Elsewhere, caravans on the dyke roads were caught in the open by falls of acid that came from flocks of fattened blight harriers, one of Hethemre's favourite killing methods. Bodies fell there, moisture drawn from them until they became brittle husks and masses of powdery remains. Hethemre had no tactics in mind, and there was no great military plan afoot to gather power or land. This was simply an act of petulant retaliation, to salt the land and destroy what had never belonged to the overlord in the first place. The crowning action of his viciousness was to unleash a great pack of revenants and creatures stitched together in the dank confines of an experimentum chamber. The horde of things jabbered and roamed the burned lands, looking for any lessers who had not been lucky enough to die from fire or acid fall. All this destructive spite might have been tolerated if it had ended there. But Hethemre was a bellicose fool, and not given to consideration of much beyond the next moment, the next caprice. The minor overlord's forces were so desperate to make murder that they chased the survivors into the foothills of the Great Grey Mountains, the lowest ranges of the peaks atop which many of Hethemre's ghastly rivals had their fortresses and holdfasts. They dared to encroach upon territory that the other overlords actually valued. This is where Mortarion came upon Hethemre's monsters, as they concluded their killing of a survivor group that had been discovered hiding in a shallow cavern. The lessers had gone to ground there, not just in hope of avoiding death from the roving creatures, but also to seek escape from the noxious fogs that swirled endlessly around the low slopes. They had unwittingly trapped themselves. To go downhill would take them into the teeth of the monsters, but to venture upward would force the humans into the higher reaches, where the atmosphere's toxicity grew denser with each rise. The lessers were mostly dead by the time Mortarion arrived, but he heard enough screams to know that the remainder would keep the pack interested, long enough for him to get close. His own cadre of Gollum soldiers, if such a name could ever really be given to these once men, muttered and whispered to themselves in their ranks behind him, as he observed the scene from the cover of a ridge. Beings of high savagery and low intellect, the golems that had survived long enough had learned to obey the sharp, grunted commands of the tall and gangly youth, who stood a head higher than the largest of them. While he was pale, like bleached bone, his consumptive aspect and black leather armour hid the truth of a wiry and whipcord strong body. Dark eyes the colour of soured blood peered out from beneath an unkempt fall of lank black hair. Never at rest, his searching gaze flitted from place to place, constantly looking for the next threat. Hands with long and skeletal fingers clutched at the haft of a heavy cleaver falchion with a rusted blade, rocking it back and forth. The weapon was a battlefield find, fit to be used until broken, and like all his swords before it, it had never felt right in Mortarion's grip. He sucked in a breath of heavy turned air. The strongest of any lesser would find nothing but poison in the fetor of the mists, but the toxins at this altitude were meaningless to Mortarion. His constitution worked on a different scale to those of the ordinary humans. It was just one more of the secrets about his existence that had never been explained, and not for the first time the youth wondered what the air would taste like down there in the valleys, where the lessers lived out their miserable existences. His father had forbidden him to find out, of course. Mortarion's back bore the scars from where he'd been whipped to bare the bone, as punishment for once daring to venture too far beyond his master's sight. He had been a child then, but that time still seemed close to the youth, set in recent memory. It was difficult to reckon the passage of months, even years, on Barbarous. What could be thought of as a day was only a few hours of feeble, directionless sunlight in each cycle, the faint glow piss-yellow and sickly. Nights were long and damp. There were no true seasons to speak of, only a bruised grey pallor in the sky that would wax and wane, sometimes bringing vicious storms that wept black, greasy tears. "Help us!" The scream echoed up from the hollow, breaking through Mortarion's reverie. A man, wailing in desperation, repeated his entreaty over and over, as he lost all reason in the vain hope that some deliverance would come, if only he asked for it.
"What a fool," thought the youth. "Who does he think is listening? Who does he think cares?"
The golems grunted and shifted on their thin legs, stirred by the frantic note of panic in the man's voice, and Mortarion's own question echoed back at him through the canyons of his mind. He dismissed it with a grimace, and drew the black powder repeater pistol holstered at his hip, shaking the iron gun to spin up the chemical trigger batteries in the grip. The golem soldiers knew that noise, and their agitation grew. They knew it was the precursor to the kill command. Mortarion gave Hethenre's monsters a last look, listening to the man's cries die as they ate him alive. This would be a close hand and needlessly messy engagement. He knew that from experience. Had his father seen fit to grant him use of just one of the Overlord's warclads, it would have been over in moments. A single iron stalker tank would have quickly destroyed the rival's revenants with gel-fire projectors or shot cannonades. But his father knew that full well. And as with every other thing in Mortarion's life, this battle was a test for him to pass. If he did not win by brutality alone, if he was not strong enough for that, then he was a lesser and would be treated as such. The thought burned in his mind, and it pushed him up, over the ridge, and into a sprinting advance. The golems howled in pleasure and spilled across the muddy ground behind him, spitting and brandishing their pikes. Mortarion's repeater sparked and bellowed as he fired into the closest of the non-dead, and the patchwork horrors unleashed by Hethemre's resentment. Festering meat blew apart as the guns' fat bullets impacted upon their targets. The heads of the rounds were filled with an incendiary explosive compound of Mortarion's own creation, something he'd invented in idle hours spent in the hollows of the bastion tower his father had built for him. Bodies were still falling as the gun's magazine clicked empty, and he entered blade's range, setting to work with the cleaver falchion. He chopped ragged limbs from torsos, stamping still twitching hands into the ashy slurry. He used the heavy pepperbox cluster of the repeater's barrels as a cudgel to cleave in skulls. Spurts of thick congealed blood and stringy greenish ichor spattered over his armour as he advanced step by step. The revenants possessed enough instinct to know where the greatest threat lay, and a clump of them attacked him in unison, even as their fellows were being run through and battered down by Mortarion's golem pikemen. The youth was suddenly swarmed before he could pause to reload the repeater, and it was knocked from his grip, clattering as it was trampled into the cinders, dragging a length of safety chain from his holster along with it. Mortarion ignored the loss of the gun and grabbed the throat of the nearest non-dead, using it as a shield. The falchion, in his other hand, was already labouring to cut the cankerous meat of the creatures, growing blunt with each successive blow he landed. The melee became hackwork now, a punishing butchery that was artless and grisly. Talons raked over Mortarion's body, claws cutting in 100 different places, and the sheer weight of the attackers slowed his advance to a crawl. His boot crunched on something wet and breakable, and the youth caught a glimpse of the still warm corpse he had stumbled over. He saw the torn face of the screaming man, frozen in death, wisps of steam rising from the myriad bites and slashes that had ended him. The moment of hesitation allowed the non-dead to knock Mortarion off balance, and he cursed as his footing slipped away. A colossal heap of vile, stinking flesh heaped upon him, attempting to crush the youth beneath their weight. Snapping at him, blackened teeth in grinning mouths crowded on all sides, beneath milky eyes that seeped oily tears. The dry decay of papery skin filled his nostrils, along with the bitter metallic stink of pus oozing from buboes in livid triad clusters. Mortarion released a murmuring growl and drew in, his muscles bunching as he found his centre, planting himself firmly against the despoiled earth. With a savage, violent explosion of force, he slammed back against the mass of the revenants and threw them off, sending broken bodies flying, cleaving with the scarred and cracked sword blade. Dozens were crushed to paste from the concussion of the blow, torn apart for daring to meet this dark champion in close combat. But even as the youth staggered free of the clutch, a new and greater foe came loping out of the toxic haze. As big as one of the Elect's steam crawlers, the kill beast was an agglomerate, a patchwork thing made up of human and animal pieces. Maddened by pain, it hooted through double sets of phlegm-drooling nostrils, cut and stitched from what had once been a pair of herd grocks. A distorted bulbous body balanced on 7 muscular legs, some transplanted from humans, others not, and there was a cluster of eyes in a clump across one quivering sheaf of muscle tissue. It resembled an insane child's sketch of a spider, a misshapen creature made of nothing but deformity. It belched a jet of bile, and where the thick glutinous matter landed, the ashen earth melted into vaporous pools. Several of Mortarion's golems were caught in the fluid, and they burst open at its touch. He threw corpses at the agglomerate and dodged the next noxious ejection, striking for a knee joint in the nearest leg. The falchion cut through skin and muscle, but when it met gristle and bone it stopped dead, the impact force jerking Mortarion's arm and causing the kill beast to hoot in agony. The youth attempted to dislodge the blade, but it bent in his grip and finally broke clean in two. He staggered back, holding the stub of the sword, just in time to meet the agglomerate's wild counterattack. Another giant's limb, this one ending in a broad tripartite hand, slammed him into the ground, clutched him, and then did it again and again. Mortarion's head rang, and he lost focus. He jammed the broken remnant of the falchion into the limb, but then the weapon was gone. He flailed around, trying to catch the spinning links of the chain to which his repeater pistol was still attached, but the kill beast flung him about with such mad frenzy it was impossible to grab it. The next blow was struck with enough force that it distorted his armour and broke bone. Mortarion's head was rammed into the earth, filling his mouth and throat with the powdery ashes of Hethemre's fires. Mortarion was strong, yes, stronger than any lesser, and more than a match for any champion the Barbaran-elect could field. But he was not invincible. The cinders were choking him, suffocating the air from his powerful lungs. A strain of potent emotion shot through him, a rare and fleeting grasp of what had to be fear. He was not a stranger to it. In the darkest hours, his perfect memories would draw up a sip of it, gathered from moments that he could barely comprehend, recollection from before his birth, from some kind of womb space. Fear lurked there, the not knowing and the not understanding, the lack of self and the missing purpose, the awful, crushing certainty of abandonment. Mortarion did what he always did, and used that fuel to stoke the will to survive. He would not die. He would not perish. There were too many questions to be answered, too much about his origins left unknown. The shadow of death was not here to take him, but to be his guardian. Struggling against the monstrous pressure of the kill beast's claw, Mortarion fought to find one last breath, to hold on one more moment. And then he saw light. Golden light, captured in the blade of a massive scimitar, burning brighter than truth. The sword cut through the air with a shriek of thunder, and he knew he was wrong. The glorious perfect hue faded away, and the towering weapon became something rust-caked and damned. Mortarion's heart sank as he realized that this would be the failure of today's particular test. The blade severed the limb holding him down, and all pressure ceased immediately. The youth scrambled to his feet, coughing out the ashes that had almost suffocated him, and he saw the weapon make another brutal cut. This time, the scimitar cut open the agglomerate and vented its innards to the misty day. The kill beast's death cry was a pathetic, childlike wail that rang away to echo off the mountainside. As it fell, so chugs of fire flew in on arcs of black smoke, thrown from the turrets of stalker tanks rising from the ridgeline. The remnants of the Overlord Hethemre's killing parties were blasted apart as they ran, and several of Mortarion's golems suffered the same fate by being too slow to flee the target zone. He turned, knowing who he would see standing over him. The rank odour of his foster father's midnight robes stung the air.
"Bye," said Nakare, greatest of the Barbaran-elect and highest of the overlords. "You disappoint me."
The words dripped with contempt. Tall enough that he could look down upon Mortarion's rangy form, the overlord was a burned bone charcoal sketch upon diseased pages. He was garbed in a hooded mantle of sailcloth, so dark it seemed to eat the light around it, and what could be seen of Nakare's corpse-flesh face and hands was nightmarish and alien. If his kind had ever shared any kinship with humans, that history had been seared away and forgotten. Now, like all of the overlords, Nakare was a horror, as if the universe had decided to express the fullness of the word cruelty in a living, breathing being. The huge sword that had cut the agglomerate in two vanished into the folds of his robe, even as it seemed impossible to sheathe a weapon of such size beneath it. The overlord took a step forward, appearing to glide over the burned lands without the actual effort of walking. Even that simple act was beneath him.
"How many more times must I preserve your life?"
Nakare never tired of posing this question to Mortarion. He had asked it after throwing the boy into a pit of starved canids, before he could walk upright. Asked it when he stripped Mortarion naked and left him to scale the sheerest cliffs during a torrential acid storm. asked it when he had forced him to slay barehanded a legion of golems and then a legion more. Always in judgment, often in mockery, never satisfied with the reply.
"I needed no help," said Mortarion, spitting on the ground. "I can kill well enough alone."
Nakare arched as he bent closer, and the youth sensed the turn of the page towards the next step in this performance.
"You have not earned that right, boy. You are never out of my sight. Remember that. You live at my pleasure."
"I know."
Mortarion bowed his head, not because he felt gratitude, but because he knew it was expected of him. He had long since grown to hate his foster father's reasoning for keeping him alive, and there were some bleak days when he wished the Overlord had simply murdered him as a foundling. The tale of his beginning on Barbarus was known to the youth, partially from his confused memories of the events, and partially from what Nakare had told him in order to secure his gratefulness, or when he beat him for his willful nature. The High One had a reputation for brutality that made even his fellow overlords pause, but he was also a capricious being. There had come a day when he had bathed the bleak summits in the blood of a rival, and in the wake of the massacre, Nakare had gone to gloat over the dead. His enemy had been concealing something, a prize that the Overlord's slaves had told him fell from the sky. Nakare decided he would possess it, out of spite and raw jealousy. The prize was not what he had expected. Among the fields of the dead cast across the mountainside, a newborn's cries broke the silence of the mouldering corpses. The Overlord hesitated to kill the youngling, intrigued by its uncanny resilience. It looked like a lesser, a human. It should have been dead. And yet. Nakare delighted in ridiculing the young Mortarion with the story, declaring he suspected him to be an aberrant mutant of some stripe. At other times he would relay the tale differently, claiming the foundling story to be a lie he concocted out of cold amusement, and the truth being that the boy was a failed experiment the Overlord himself had created from raw genetic matter and abducted lesser chattels. Wherever his origins lay, the child was claimed by Nakare and given his name, a word in the Barbaran dialect of High Gothic that meant born out of death. And in his twisted, inhuman way, the Overlord groomed Mortarion as his heir. He tested Mortarion's limits, learning how great a concentration of toxins the child could survive, and used that knowledge to determine exactly where to erect a walled domicile along the rise of the mountain range. High enough that the poisoned atmosphere kept a rein on the fast-growing boy, distant from the lessers in the valleys below, and far from Nakare's own dark castle in the upper reaches, where the youth could not venture. There was nothing approaching affection in that association, however. It was a harshly transactional relationship, weighted completely in favour of the foster father. The boy became the youth. The youth became the Overlord's tool. Perhaps, Mortarion wondered, that had been his aim all along. To forge me into a weapon filled with nothing but hate and anger.
"You are loyal to me, my son," intoned Nakare,
making the statement solid and real with his declaration.
"But you have much to learn, and far to go."
He gave a shake of the head.
"This is the last time. Show me weakness again, and I will give you to the cutters to toy with."
The Overlord drifted away, fading towards a humming steam crawler bedecked with ornate decorations and his majestic chains of sworn fealty. Mortarion watched in silence as the craft clattered away, picking up speed as it headed into the mists and up towards the flank of the tallest peak. There, where venomous snows coated the dead rock and the air itself was so poisonous that even he could not walk, stood the black manse of Mortarion's adoptive father. And like the warmth and the peace that the youth would never know, it would forever be beyond his reach. The warp, now. An undeniable instinct, that bone-deep hatred he held for all the ways of the witch, made him certain of it. Something out there was doing this.
My lord!
Kaifa Morarg's voice was as close to dread as a death guard's might be. And his dim shape hove near to Mortarion, one of the equerry's hands coming up to touch his vambrace.
Do you hear me?
Mortarion angrily batted away his gauntlet, and he spat black fluid on the deck to clear his throat of the fading constriction.
Step away.
Bad enough that this unexpected assault had actually affected him. It was worse that the Primarch had been forced to weather it in front of his men. It annoyed him to think that he might have shown even the smallest iota of weakness before them, and Morarg's concern deepened that sense all the more.
I am unharmed.
He cast around the bridge of the Terminus Est. Stricken legionaries were climbing to their feet, some wiping dark purple blood from their nostrils and the corners of their eyes. Others listed as they recovered their senses, gasping in breaths of air like men who had nearly drowned. Many of the human helot crew were not so fortunate. Dozens of uniformed serf officers lay dead, some slumped over their consoles, others in tormented, stricken poses on the deck. Mortarion saw a helmsman whose face was nothing but red rags, clawed to ruin by his bony fingers, and a gunnery controller who appeared to have deliberately broken her own neck against a support pillar. A grim-faced Legion apothecary crouched and prodded the dead woman, scanning her corpse with an Auspex reader. He felt an unexpected flash of anger.
Humans are so pathetic.
The Primarch rejected the thought and strode to the middle of the command deck.
Who will explain this to me?
He demanded.
What happened here?
We are still within the grasp of the Empyrean,
said Typhon, scanning an oil lens projector screen in front of him. He nodded towards the shuttered portals and the sinister glow that seeped in around the edges of the sealed panels.
During the fleet's transition, the scry sensors registered an unexpected discharge of energies.
Sabotage,
said Morarg in a low warning tone.
Or a malfunction. Too soon to know,
said the first captain.
Status of the other vessels.
Mortarion made it a command, and Typhon echoed it with a nod. His second, the Grave Warden Vios, moved to a vox console and spoke to the operator.
Reports coming in from other decks,
continued Typhon, watching trains of text unfurl across the projector.
Many casualties among the human serfs, numbering in the thousands. The majority appear to be self-inflicted. Some of the lower tiers were vented to space by crew members who opened airlocks.
He paused, showing little more than passing concern.
A notation here. Some forced executions have been required. What say you, Crucius?
Morarg asked the apothecary, looking askance at the crewman with the ruined face.
They are void-cursed.
The apothecary scowled at the cooling corpse and gave a sage nod.
I've seen it before. The touch of the immaterium turned their minds, drove them insane.
And yet our Geller fields are intact.
Mortarion glared at the ticking brass console from where the protective energy barriers were controlled. The dials were all set at full potentiality.
How then can witchery invade the Terminus Est?
He eyed Typhon over the mask of his breather. Some touch of the psyker had always been a part of his old comrade, and it had never, it would never, sit well with the Reaper of Men. Typhon knew what was unsaid there, knew the suggestion of blame that was not made solid, but he did not rise to the bait.
Well, the equerry may be right. This could be a weapon our enemies deployed against us. But it could also be some peculiarity of the warp, my lord. The non-space we pass through does not follow the rules of the material universe. It is a capricious and changeable sea. Its effects can never be fully predicted, nor prepared for.
Mortarion shook his head. He was well aware of the strange anomalies that could occur during a warp transit. Peculiar shifts in time that could mean a ship arriving weeks before it set sail. Journeys that took the blink of an eye while a century passed in real space. The incidents of ghosts and visions and other phenomena. But a phantom malaise that could strike at the indomitable constitution of the Death Guard. That was something he would not accept.
This is not a Psi tempest or some artifact of the ruin storm. Find me the answer, Captain. We have a rendezvous to keep. This Legion's appointment with Eternity will suffer no delay. I will not allow it.
Typhon hesitated, and in that moment Vios spoke.
My lord, we have made contact with several other ships in the flotilla. They report similar circumstances. Thousands of humans dead and legionaries briefly brought low.
I will address their commanders.
Mortarion turned, and as he did, a handful of shimmering figures emerged out of the air. Fully dimensional images of a dozen other Death Guard officers formed from sculpted laser light that fell from hololithic projectors in the ceiling. The phantoms flickered and juddered, broken by random transmission artifacts, but they were clear enough for the Primarch to recognize familiar faces and armor heraldry. He addressed the first of them directly.
Calgaro, do you hear me?
Lord Mortarion, aye.
Marshal Grimus Calgaro's eyes glittered in the artificial light.
We are still recovering. There has been some damage aboard the Endurance. An armed confrontation on the engine decks.
A confrontation with what?
Morag broke protocol by asking the question, but the Primarch let the moment slip by unremarked.
Unclear,
said Calgaro.
First reports suggest an outbreak of mass hysteria among the deck swaps. They've been put down.
Mortarion's master of ordnance looked troubled. During the absence of Typhon and his splinter fleet forces, Calgaro had served as the Primarch's second-in-command. But the stoic officer was ill-equipped to captain a starship, even a battle barge as mighty as the flagship Endurance.
The same occurred here,
said the image standing alongside Calgaro's. Serob Kargil was senior legionary aboard the battlecruiser Malefic, another of Mortarion's chosen elite officers.
A great number of deaths. There was a moment when all aboard the ship, all of us, Lord, and the Legion included...
Kargil's hand reflexively went to his throat.
Yes, said Mortarion, cutting him off. We felt it here, too.
The other commanders... among them Malek Voss aboard the cruiser Balefire, and Gideus Kral on the bridge of the Ceaseless Advance, nodded in weary unison.
Our sensors registered the loss of three ships in the forward task element, said Kral. Two destroyers and a strike cruiser. Weapons fire was not exchanged. It appears to be the result of a self-destruct or critical system failure. Some maddened soul ended themselves and took others with them,
Morag offered.
I'll warrant this ill effect touched every craft in our fleet,
said Typhon.
No mere malfunction could have caused it. This was deliberate.
If the Reaper permits, Kargil added, I would suggest we attempt to detranslate from the Empyrean and regroup. If there is a threat here with us in this tormented realm, then better we remove ourselves from it.
Is that wise?
Voss's lined brow furrowed.
If this is the effect of a weapon deployed against us, another transition may trigger it once again. We'll be ready this time,
countered the other Death Guard. Mortarion's instinct sounded as Kargil's did. His immediate desire was to put as much distance as possible between his fleet and this demon-infested space. But he also saw that Voss's reticence had merit. A cold, forbidding sense of threat drifted on the horizon of his thoughts, and although he could not articulate it, the Primarch knew there was a greater danger lurking.
For what it is worth, I concur with Captain Voss, offered Typhon. We're Death Guard, are we not?
We have never been known to retreat, even in the face of an unknown threat.
The Primarch left the comment where it lay.
We will do nothing without first understanding, Mortarion intoned after a long moment.
He looked towards Typhon's second.
Vios, send word to every ship in the fleet to close ranks. If needed, have the larger vessels extend the perimeter of their Geller fields to ensure the others are fully protected. For the moment, we will proceed apace and gather ourselves.
It was very much a Death Guard tactic, to draw in and advance with armour raised against the dangers beyond. The Primarch glanced back at Calgaro and the other holographic images.
See to your ships and your crews, my sons. Gather what data you can on this assault. We will not attempt another transition until I am certain it poses no further threat.
With respect, Lord, that could take days of subjective time.
Kral folded his thick arms in front of him.
Will the War Master delay for us at Terra's gates if we do not arrive when expected?
My brother cannot begin the invasion without me, snapped Mortarion, unwilling to look too hard at his own statement. Do as I say.
He slashed the blade of his hand through the air, ordering Vios to cut the hololithic connections.
Lord, said Typhon, stepping forward.
He spoke with quiet intensity.
The quicker we find the source of this attack, the better. I have a suggestion.
I will not like it, he replied.
Once, long ago, this exchange had brought cold humour to both their faces. But not today, and not here. Undaunted, the first captain continued.
I will take some of my men, some specialists, out into the fleet.
Mortarion eyed him. He knew exactly what that meant, and his jaw hardened. Psykers. Witch kindred. Those touched by the very thing he had fought his whole life to eradicate, that even now was attacking them. He looked into Typhon's steady gaze, and once again considered a question that had plagued him for a very long time.
This man is my brother in battle, my first friend and fellow outcast. But in him lies the poison I loathe so, the weapon I abhor to wield.
Would the Reaper of Men look away now, as he had so many times before? Would he take the meagre ease of knowing that this was a matter of expedience over scruples?
If there is something irregular in this, I will know,
Typhon went on.
I will find it. Grant me your trust, Mortarion. You let me carry your banner. Now let me do this.
Go, he said at length.
But bring me an answer that I can grip in my hands.
Typhon showed a cold smile and bowed.
Your will.
The first captain strode away, and Mortarion walked to the back of the command arena, dwelling on the order he had just given. None of the Death Guard had spoken of it in the aftershock of the transition, but he knew, as only a Gene Father could, that every single one of his warriors had suffered that same terrible moment of dread he had experienced, the suffocating, choking paralysis that no warrior of the Legionis Astartes, no Primarch born, should ever have known. It felt as brief as the blink of an eye, but the duration was unimportant. In that impossible instant, Mortarion had been weak. His memory had dragged him back to a past moment when that same dire sense had filled him, and he could only wonder if his sons had shared the same terror. But to speak of it would be to give it form and power, to admit it.
Better, he thought, to deny and dismiss, to excise it as if it had never happened.
The alternative was to open a door towards a possibility he did not care to face.
Lord Mortarion?
His equerry was at his side. Morag was no fool. He saw the new distance in his master's mien.
What would you have me do?
Give Captain Typhon whatever he requires, said the Reaper of Men,
opening a hatch to the shuttered dome of the warship's observatorium.
"And for now, give me my solitude."